CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And Fire It Up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. The Sky.
We're back with Fire It Up with CJ, live from the headquarters of CBS Sky Radio. Fire Up with CJ. You can access any of her old shows, her new shows, or any information on her website at fireitupwithcj.com. She has guest Dr. Lloyd Setterer on her show right now. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hey, great. Welcome back, everybody, to the Fired Up with CJ show. I'm CJ Liu, and we're talking to Dr. Lloyd Setterer,
who is the author of the Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for being here. So this segment, we're really going to be focusing on how important it is for you to act if you suspect that you have a loved one that may have a problem with mental illness, and how responsible action is so critical in terms of preventing future problems later on, not only potential brain damage that could happen, we were talking about that in the first segment, or having repeat episodes and a bunch of other symptoms. So in this segment, we're going to talk about what to look for if you suspect mental illness and what the risks are if not responding. So what is the risk of dragging your feet? And one of the things that you said in the book that I thought was interesting is usually from the signs, the symptoms, all the way to the time the family usually does something, the average time is 9 years before they react.
It's hard to believe, but it is true.
Yeah. So what are the risks? If you drag your feet, you had mentioned before that it's a progression of mental, it's a progression in the duration if untreated. Tell us a little bit about the risks are of doing nothing.
Yeah, I'm glad to. And let me also suggest to families that they trust what they're seeing, and that they trust their feelings. That often there something happens with a family member, they start to be different. Their thinking's not right. They tend to isolate themselves. They don't want to spend time with their friends. They seem preoccupied. And there's something going on, but you see somebody every day and you begin to think, well, maybe there's something the matter should I trust what I'm seeing? So I urge families, members who are seeing a loved one start to be different, to jot down a few simple things that they're observing, like spent the weekend in bed. You know, has two more notches to close the belt on his to fix his belt. Doesn't answer the calls from his friends anymore or her friends anymore. Basic things that observe that indicate that somebody is changing, you know, or is constantly now late for work or late for school, and then, as a way of noting what you observe, as a way of gaining some confidence that you can trust what you're seeing, because then a few days later you can pick up that list and you can say, well, boy, you know, that's, I was right, it's still there. You can then turn to another family member or somebody you can confide in and trust and say, you know, this is what I'm seeing in my daughter, my son, my spouse. You know, do you notice some of this too? So you can get some validation.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are the beginnings of the conversation which you need to have with a loved one, which is to say, you know, I'm seeing something. It's not just me, your brother, your father. These are the things we notice, and we're worried about you. We're concerned. We have to figure out together how you can get evaluated, because something's going on here, and I know you may not think so, but we think so, and here's what we're seeing. So all of that is part of building a foundation for making a case for getting help. And then it gets to the reason that that's so important is because delaying treatment, particularly for serious mental illness or illness where people have psychosis, where they lose capacity to appreciate what's real or what's not, where they may be hearing voices or seeing things or getting very paranoid. The duration of untreated illness for that condition or serious bipolar, big mood swings, is in the range often of 7, 8, or 9 years. And during that time, there's a disease, there's a mental disease in the brain that's going unchecked, and you wouldn't want any disease in the brain to go unchecked, to progress, and because what's going to happen is someone's going to fall behind in school and work, they're going to not develop normally. There's something going on in the brain. It needs to be treated in order for people to get back on the normal track of
And is that brain things that you see the with bipolars and any kind of psychosis or schizophrenia? Is it irreversible brain damage or?
Well,
can it be fixed?
You know, the amazing thing about the brain is that it has what neuroscientists now call plasticity, which means, and you see this even with stroke, people with stroke, they can move a function to another part of the brain. So even with a stroke where there's brain tissue that dies because of blood has been cut off to that section of the brain, people can train another part of the brain to learn to speak again or be able to move their muscles better. So the brain is pretty plastic, but it's much better, much, much better to prevent that from happening than having to try to rehabilitate from what has been loss of brain function.
Mm-hmm. My friend Sally wanted to ask a question about kindling. Can you talk? What's your question?
Hello, Dr. Center. I'm Sally in Seattle here.
Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have had depression or on and off for baby boomer. And so when I realized now that when I had my first episodes, I didn't even know what was going on, nor did anybody around me. And what I read in your book about the kindling effect makes me wonder if it's really difficult for me now to think that I would ever do well without any medication. Could you say something about that, please?
Yes, please. Well, thank you for being so forthright, because when you are able to talk about your experience with depression, so can other people, and they can begin to get help. But kindling is a really interesting process that goes on in the brain, and it's borrowed essentially from, you know, think about a campfire where you put some small twigs and paper, and then that kindles some larger twigs, and then finally you can get a log to burn, and then that log can ignite other logs. The brain, in some ways, with these diseases, is like that. At first, you have to start with kindling. You start with a little bit of where the disease comes once. But then the likelihood that disease will then happen again, that's called recurrence, increases. So it's easier for the brain to get on fire again, for the disease to come back if there's been one episode. If there's been two episodes, three episodes, four episodes, it doesn't take much for that next log to ignite. The brain has essentially begun to kindle itself. It's much more vulnerable to having a repeat episode of an illness. And that's why I think you were saying also then it's harder to go without treatment, because treatment is your best protection against another episode. It may be medications, it may be therapy, it may be some of the ways that you use your talents. All of those are ways that you protect yourself from another depression, but it becomes more critical. The more episodes of depression or mania that a person has, psychosis, the more likelihood they're apt to have one, and the harder they have to work to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Mm. Yeah, so then it's not being pessimistic to think that I might have to continuously be on at least some dose of a medication.
I don't think that's pessimistic. I think it's realistic. Imagine if you had diabetes and you had diabetes for, you know, 20 or 30 years, you would know that you need to take your anti-diabetic medication, whether it's a pill or an injection. You have to watch your sugar intake. You want to exercise. You need to take good care of your sleep. All of these are ways that you manage your illness, and that's realistic, and it allows you to have a much more full and rewarding life because you do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I know that it's always been a dream to get off of medication, mine and a lot of people that I know that have the same thing I do, and it's always such a heartbreaker when out of the blue you're right back in it again.
Yeah, you know, maybe you can help us understand that, because people on who with diabetes or heart disease, they often want to get off their medication, but it doesn't seem to be as compelling a need as people who are depressed or have mania or bipolar disease. They much more want to get off their medication, even though, you know, as we think about it, it's just as essential as a diabetic or a heart medicine. What's so compelling about needing to get off that medicine?
You know, well, we actually have to go to break, so we're going to have to, we'll actually have to cover it in either online and going to your website where you have a Ask Dr. Loy, Sedar, et cetera, questions. So I just want to wrap up. So really the key message here is act as quickly as you can. Don't wait for 9 years, because there's a lot of positive things that happen and a lot of risks when you don't act quickly. The kindling that we talked about, as well as some of the other things. And then in Dr. Sedar's book, The Family Guide to Mental Health Care, there's a long list of things. He talked about eating. He also talked about socializing, moods, thinking, sleeping, hygiene. He'll have lots and lots of details in Eric's book if you suspect that you actually have a family member who has a mental illness. So we will be right back, and we're going to be talking about how to have that dialogue if you suspect something with a family member. We'll be right back.